So, today morning we are discussing on the conclusion that Maitreya Rishi wants to convey to Vidura from the narration of the life of Swayambhumanu. So, he is telling Bhautikascha Katham Klesha Badhante Hari Samshraya, that one who has Hari Samshraya, one who has taken shelter of Lord Hari, how can such a person suffer material miseries? Bhautikascha Katham Klesha. So Bhautika is material miseries. Material, and Klesha is miseries. And then basically the three kinds of miseries are talked about. Adi Bhautik, Adi Daivik, Adi Atmik. So Adi Atmik is referred to as Sharira Manasa. Then Divya is referred to as Daivik. And Manusha Bhautika. Manusha, other living beings, other Bhutas, other living beings. This is referred to as, and that is referring to Adi Bhautik. So, when the soul comes to the material world, the soul is placed in these three circles, cases. Now, we have a bodily case, we have a social case, we have a bodily enclosure, a social enclosure, and an environmental enclosure. And all these three enclosures become sources of misery for the living entity. The soul is Sachidananda. Now, people ask, if we are actually happy, joyful, then why can't we experience the joy right now? It is because our consciousness is directed outwards. We are spiritual, but just like if a person is sitting peacefully at home, but is watching a horror movie. What happens is, the person is peaceful, but the person is not peaceful. The person actually is not in danger, but the consciousness is caught in the horror movie being displayed, and that's why the person suffers. So like that, the soul by nature is Sachidananda, but the soul's consciousness is directed towards these three external coverings. So the psychophysical or bodily mental covering, then there is the social covering. We have various relationships. So through the psychophysical covering, through the social covering, and through the environmental covering, the soul tries to seek pleasure. Now we try to, through our body, through our relationships, through our environment, we seek pleasure. And that attempt to seek pleasure through the externals actually rivets, locks, traps our consciousness in matter. And that's how we suffer. So, Purusha Prakritistho hi bhungte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sadasadyoni janmasu. In 13.22 in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says that Purusha, the soul, Prakritistho hi, is situated in material nature because of bhungte, because of the desire to enjoy. And that's how sadasadyoni janmasu experiences good and bad in various species of life. So, these three kleshas come because the soul, this soul's consciousness is caught in these three layers of material covering. And generally in many karmakandi ceremonies, often the ceremonies conclude with Om Shantihi, Shantihi, Shantihi. So they say three times Shanti because the idea is there are three kleshas in the world. So Adibhautik Klesh Shanti, Adibhautik Klesh Shanti, Adhyatmik Klesh Shantihi. That is the idea. So, the kleshas always, the karav coverings that we are in, they make us ashant constantly. Now, this verse in specific and the Bhagavatam in general makes an extraordinary claim that a devotee will not suffer these three miseries. In fact, the reference comes many times later on in this canto itself when Kapildeva is instructing Devahuti. At that time, he will say something similar. Madashraya katha amrishta shunvanti kathayanti cha tapanti vividhastapa naitan madgata chetasaha. So he says that madashraya katha amrishta, here Hari Samshraya it is mentioned. Shelter of our Lord Hari, same point is mentioned over there. Lord Kapildev is speaking, so he is saying the first person. Madashraya, those who take shelter of me, how? Katha amrishta, the delightful pastimes. Shunvanti kathayanti cha, they hear it, they speak it. What happens? Tapanti vividhastapa. Tapanti, that means the miseries, they afflict us. Vividhastapa, they afflict all people, but naitan madgata chetasaha. Naitan, those who are madgata chetasa, those whose consciousness is in me, are not affected. So how does it actually happen that a devotee is in the material world but the devotee does not suffer? So actually it is what can be called as Krishna conditioning. You know, now if the weather is very hot and people are sweating, but if you come inside an AC room, then the heat is there outside, but the person doesn't feel the heat inside. So tapanti vividha astapa naitan madgata chetasaha. Similarly, the miseries of material existence are there, but if we bring our consciousness within the remembrance of Krishna, then our consciousness becomes Krishna conditioned. And because Krishna is the source of all happiness, therefore, although the miseries are there, the miseries don't make the devotee miserable. The miseries don't necessarily go away. They may be there, but the miseries don't make the devotee miserable. So how does this happen? How Krishna consciousness takes away our miseries is a large topic. So actually it takes away our miseries in four ways: education, purification, minimization and absorption. So Krishna consciousness takes away our misery in these four ways. Education. Often we only do wrong things which make us miserable. So when we get proper education, we don't do those wrong things. Things which bring karmic reactions either immediately or eventually. So first is education. This is good, this is bad. Now good and bad is not just based on some arbitrary scriptural fiat. As scripture says this is good, so it is good. Scripture says this is bad, it is bad. The obnoxious is obnoxious because it is noxious. What that means is, that which scripture says is bad, that is bad because it is harmful for us. It will make us miserable in the long run. So first is education. I'm not going to talk, I will only focus in this class on the last part, absorption. But I'll just mention the first three. So education, just knowing what is right and what is wrong, that helps us to avoid doing the wrong, and that saves us from the complications that come because of that. Then, first is education. Second is purification. Sometimes we know that some things are wrong, but still we are unable to give them up. But when we get Krishna consciousness, then our desires become purified. When our desires become purified, then we are not pulled and pushed and dragged to do wrong things. That also saves us not only from the external reactions, but also from the inner agitation. When we are purified, then we are not even agitated when the temptations come. So that also actually frees a person from a lot of misery. No, if somebody is a drunkard, then every time the person gets some stimulus, you know, passes by a liquor shop or just sees something or someone with whom he has drunk, then immediately the mind gets agitated. Now other people who are purified, who have never drunk, they have no agitation at all because the temptation has not been there for them. So similarly, you know, so many sense objects come in the vision of our consciousness and they agitate us. But when we become purified, then that whole universe of agitation ceases to exist for us. So we can experience this with respect to some temptations. Maybe we might have been addicted to tea or coffee or maybe eggs or meat or something like that. Now if we see it, there is no agitation. So purification itself frees a person from a lot of miseries. Education, purification. Third is minimization. Actually, when we surrender to Krishna, Krishna minimizes our sinful reactions. Whatever we are supposed to get, Krishna gives us only a small sample of that. That also reduces our sufferings. And tatte nukampam susumikshamana bhunjane vatmakritam vipakam. So understand that actually by the anukampa of Krishna, the atmakritam vipakam, my own misdeeds which I have to suffer, the reactions, you have minimized them, O Krishna. The devotee feels grateful. That's minimization. And the last is absorption. So this will be the focus of our class. How does absorption free us from misery? Actually, the soul by default in material existence is in one emotional state, that is boredom. you know, the survey done in America, they said that among even the wealthy and well-to-do people, they are 5% of the time happy, 5% of the time miserable, 90% of the time bored. So the whole entertainment industry is actually a boredom industry. Because people are bored, that's why they want all kinds of entertainment. Now why are people bored? Because life at the sensual level, so you can live at the sensual level, the mental level, the intellectual level, the spiritual level, the devotional level. So we can live life at various levels. Now life at the sensual level inevitably becomes boring. Because at the sensual level, the pleasures are only very intermittent, infrequent. Somebody wants to eat and enjoy. Out of 24 hours, how long can a person eat? Now, people want to have sex and enjoy. Out of 24 hours, how much time can they do that? So, when the stimulus is there, they're excited. When the stimulus is taken away, they are agitated. And in between, they're bored. There's nothing else to do. So, what happens is that in general, the life at the material level is boring. And to get rid of the boredom, people try various things. So one of the things that they try out, very popular nowadays, is entertainment. Now, mundane entertainment that is there. So what happens by this is that the boredom is also a sort of misery. Because when there is nothing exciting, the soul wants excitement, the soul wants stimulation, the soul wants happiness. And there is nothing exciting, that itself is a sort of misery. And to get rid of this misery, the soul tries to find something to forget the emptiness and the boredom of life. Generally, now what is people's idea of? Sometimes people say we went for a movie, and movie maza aa gaya. Now what is their idea of maza aa gaya? Generally, they think if some movie can make me forget the emptiness, the aimlessness, the boredom of my life, then that forgetfulness of one's emptiness of life, that's what they call as maza. That's what they call as enjoyment. And that's why people need that kind of stimulation more and more. So this is basically like a painkiller. So a painkiller, you know, initially when we take it, we get free from pain. But after that, you have to keep increasing the dosage. Increasing the dosage. Increasing the dosage. Why? Because the earlier level dosage doesn't work. And so, that's why earlier in movies there might be little fighting, shum, shum, shum. But now, big building, boom, it's exploded. And people say, maza aa gaya. So what happens is that actually the stimulation, people want to increase more and more. So earlier there was 5-day cricket, which is slow, gradual, then there's 1-day cricket. Then there is T20 cricket. So what is happening? The dosage of the painkiller is increasing. So because people want more stimulation. So Indians basically had two primary painkillers. Now one is Bollywood and second is cricket. So a few years these two painkillers got married. And they produced a child whose name is IPL. So in IPL there are cricket stars, there are Bollywood stars. And if that double dosage painkiller is not enough, there are cheerleaders also. So the idea is, what is basically happening is people are becoming internally more and more empty. And that's why what actually is trying to be done through the means of hyper-stimulating entertainment is a misdirected attempt at absorption. What people are trying to do is life at that routine level of living is boring. So through entertainment, what they are trying to do, through hyper-stimulating entertainment, they are trying to absorb themselves in something else which is to some level pleasurable. So by this, they forget, or they try to forget the emptiness, the boredom, the misery of their life. So in a sense, when we say that absorption can free a person from misery, that is not such a ethereal or abstract concept. The whole entertainment industry is based on that principle only. That the entertainment industry runs because people want to absorb themselves in something by which they can forget everything else. But the real question is, what is that something in which we absorb ourselves? So when people absorb themselves in entertainment, it may give some relief, it may give some pleasure, but that absorption doesn't in any way purify them. In fact, it putrefies them. It fills them with more material desires and eventually brings them back to the same material reality where they have been unsatisfied. So in that sense, it doesn't eliminate their problems, it aggravates their problems. People are bored because there's nothing sensually exciting available in life. So then they turn on a computer, turn on a movie, or go to some sites and try to get something sensually exciting. When they get that, that may give them some stimulation, some titillation, some pleasure. But eventually, that brings them down back to the physical reality where they want gratification. And when that is not available, then they feel dissatisfied again. In fact, they feel more dissatisfied. Because the lust, the greed, the anger, that has been increased by the exposure to the entertainment. And the availability of the fulfillment of the lust, greed, anger in real life is limited. That's why. So what happened was the dissatisfaction with real life, because lust, anger, greed. See, basically, what is entertainment? You know, people have lust. So they turn on the TV, the movies, and they watch good-looking couples enjoying. So what is actually, you know, the scriptures talk about humans shouldn't live like animals, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So this is unfortunate. This is a human being who lives like an animal is unfortunate. But you know, watching television and movies is not even animal life. It is second-hand animal life. You know, somebody else is doing animalistic activities and we are thinking, if I did that, it would be so nice. So actually, it is not even animal life. It is second-hand animal life. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that in this, so at the material real level, at the level of material reality, there is not sufficient excitement in eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That's why people go towards movies. And movies and other forms of entertainment where they absorb themselves in, there they get some higher stimulation. And they watch people eating, sleeping, mating, defending, enjoying that better than what they're doing in real life. That may give them some pleasure, but that only increases their desires for eating, mating especially. And then when they come back to real life, that is not available. So what has happened is, their dissatisfaction increases. It doesn't decrease. Lust was there. Lust could not be fulfilled in real life. So they went into entertainment life. But entertainment life, that only increased the lust. And when they come back to real life, the increased lust leads to increased dissatisfaction. Same way with greed. You know, I don't have such an opulent house. So I turn on the TV and watch people who have huge row houses and resorts. And then when I come back and look at my own house, you know, I feel more dissatisfied. That's how it works. So, actually speaking, entertainment in many ways increases our dissatisfaction. Because generally, whenever the mind wants to check whether I am happy or not, the only way the mind checks whether I am happy or not is by comparison with others. You know, okay, I got one rasgulla, I got two rasgullas, I am not happy. Till I saw somebody else getting two rasgullas, my one rasgulla would have made me happy. But the mind is always directed outwards. That's why the mind doesn't know about inner happiness that is independent of comparison with others. The mind only compares with others. You know, I have this much. You know, my spouse is good looking, but that person is so much more better looking. So what happens is, the whole modern entertainment culture, you know, earlier people had their own kshetra, you know, maybe their own village, their own community, their own city, their own locality for comparison. But now the whole world becomes an arena for comparison. And not just the whole world, the most sensually agitating and alluring objects in the world become the objects of comparison. And that's why real life will inevitably pale out. You know, if there's a comparison between real life and real world and the world that is shown in the entertainment world, actually the real world will never live up to one's hopes. So that's how the entertainment industry, it promises some absorption, which people think will bring us relief. But what it is going to do is, it is going to aggravate our dissatisfaction. But this when we look at how people are absorbed in entertainment, so absorbed and so mad for that entertainment that they're ready to spend millions and millions of dollars. Billions of dollars. The entertainment industry, if we come to, if we tabulate and total all the aspects of the entertainment industry, then actually the sum total is probably more than all the other industries in the world combined together. Why are people ready to spend so much? Because at heart, they all want to be absorbed. Absorbed in something that is satisfying. Something that is liberating from the emptiness and the misery of routine daily existence. So, this misdirected attempt can be redirected by Krishna consciousness. So, in Krishna consciousness, the absorption may not be so titillating, but it is far more fulfilling. May not be so titillating means, you know, when we chant Hare Krishna, when we take darshan of Krishna, when we absorb ourselves in Krishna Katha, it may not be so sensually titillating. You know, there is no, in say rock music, there is bang, boom, doom, doom. So all that is very gross. So it may not be titillating in that sense, but it is fulfilling. So titillating is at a very superficial level. You know, if a child is there and somebody comes along and tickles the child, the child may laugh and is tickled. The child may laugh. But you know, that is not real happiness. But if the child, say mother, comes and embraces the child and caresses the child, you know, that is not, that is an expression of love that is far deeper than titillating. That is actually very satisfying to the heart. Similarly, material entertainment, it is just basically titillating, like tickling at a sensual or a mental level. It may give some pleasure, but when we come in the when we come to the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, then Krishna embraces us. When Krishna embraces us, actually that is far more fulfilling. Although it may take some time to realize it. If a child just is very restless and the mother actually embraces the child out of love, she says the child is only thinking, why am I caught like that? I just want to run around and do this and do that. But as he comes and says, I am protected now, I am safe, I am loved, I am cared for, I am nourished. So similarly, when we come to the shelter of Krishna and gradually realize that Krishna is holding us in his embrace, that Krishna is caring for us, cherishing us, nourishing us, loving us, then we feel fulfilled at a far deeper level than what is possible by the most entertaining of movies or cricket matches or whatever else. So, how does absorption Krishna free us from miseries? The miseries will be there. But actually, how much the miseries make us miserable depending on how much we miss or don't miss those miseries. See, what does it mean? How can we miss misery? Normally think we miss pleasure. Now we want to actually avoid misery. But you know, the mind has a perverse tendency. It is just like a magnet and iron filing get attracted to each other. So the mind often gets attracted to problems. You know, when problems are there, it seems as if the problems come with an inbuilt mental glue. They just adhere to the mind. What does that mean? It means that sometimes something may go wrong in our life. Somebody may insult me or some plan may not work out. Now when that happens, yes, that is a distressing event. But often our mind gets locked into that. And even when we are doing other things, again, why did that person speak like that? Why did it happen like that? Why? So that when the mind gets locked into a problem, that makes the problem bigger than it needs to be. So the problem is definitely there and it has to be dealt with. But when we live in the problem, we mentally get caught in the problem, and the problem becomes much bigger than what it needs to be. So, life determines our problems, we determine their sizes. So, life determines our problems. We can't control. This may go wrong, that may go wrong. Life determines our problems, but we determine their sizes. We determine their sizes means, if I think a lot about a problem, the problem will become bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. okay, somebody has insulted me, then I used to go, why did they do that? Why did a person speak like that? Why? And then, that person spoke that and forgot it also and went away, and I spent days and days. Now the brain becomes like a overcooked rotten vegetable.
First of all, if a rotten vegetable is there, that itself is useless. And then if you overcook it, it's just a waste of energy. So like that, you know, the whole idea that somebody insulted me and I'm holding a grudge against that itself is like a rotten vegetable. And when I keep thinking of it, what is it? Overcooking it. So it's an overcooked rotten vegetable. It doesn't serve any purpose at all, and it just dissipates our mental energy also. Now this doesn't mean that we can just turn a blind eye towards any insults or any problems. No, we need to do what we can to deal with them. Okay, somebody is insulted. Maybe I did something wrong, or maybe that person got it wrong. So let me clarify. But if the person is not in the mood of clarification, if the person is just determined to hold on to his or her own perception, then the world is a big place. Let that person go his or her way, let me go my way. You know, I don't have to lock myself mentally with that person. So, actually speaking, at the material level of consciousness, you know, our mind, the glue, the mental glue between the mind and the problem is almost unbreakable. And that's why, you know, something goes wrong and people, because of that one thing that goes wrong, then so many things go wrong after that. Why? Because they let all those things go wrong. So on the other hand, when scriptures tell us think of Krishna always, what does that always think of Krishna mean? It actually is an injunction which enables us to free our mind from these agitating, unfulfilling, frustrating thoughts and turn our mind towards Krishna. So when we think of Krishna, or we cultivate a habit of thinking of Krishna, then Krishna thoughts are actually very pacifying and satisfying. They pacify our mind and they satisfy us. And many times after we have thought of Krishna, then we can come back and look at the problem also. We'll be able to deal with the problem in a more mature way. So, you know, as devotees, all of us also have problems. But a devotee is concerned by problems, not disturbed by problems. What is the difference between being concerned and being disturbed? Concerned means, yes, I want that things should work out well and I will do what I can. I'm interested in that. I want it to work out right. So things outside are wrong and I want to set them right. But disturbed means, so when things outside are wrong and I want to set them right, that is concern. But disturbed means, things outside are wrong, because of that things inside also go wrong. That means the outside shakes the inside, then I get disturbed. So a devotee is fixed in the relationship with Krishna. A devotee knows that whatever happens in the world, ultimately Krishna is never going to leave me and go away. Krishna is always there in the heart waiting for me. And Krishna is ever waiting, Krishna is ever willing, Krishna is ever working. Krishna is ever waiting. No matter how big the trouble in our life, sometimes the trouble happens because others trouble us, sometimes the trouble happens because we ourselves do wrong things. But whatever way the troubles come, Krishna never leaves our heart and goes away. Krishna is ever waiting. He's always there. And not only is he ever waiting, he's ever willing. We may have turned away from Krishna, and sometimes Krishna consciousness is so joyful, and for such trivial pleasures we turn away from Krishna. But Krishna doesn't get angry with us. Krishna is ever willing to resume our relationship with him. And not only is Krishna ever waiting and ever willing, Krishna is ever working. Krishna is Madhruk Prapanna Pashupasha Vimokshanaya Muktaya Bhuri Karunaya Namolayaya. That Gajendra in his prayers prays that, my dear Lord, I am caught in this Pashupasha. So Pashupasha has multiple meaning. One Pashupasha is that he is caught in the jaws of the crocodile. On the other hand, he's also caught Pashupash, he's caught in an animal body. And more importantly, he's caught in animal consciousness, in the bodily consciousness. Madhruk Pashupash Prapanna Vimokshanaya. My dear Lord, I surrender to you and you please liberate me. Why you should liberate me?
Muktaya, you're yourself liberated. Bhuri Karunaya. Yes, you are liberated, but you are not just happy being liberated on your own. You don't think that I am liberated, others are bound, let them stay bound. No. Bhuri Karunaya. You want everyone to become liberated. Muktaya Bhuri Karunaya. Namo Layaya. Alayaya. Describe that you don't get tired. That so many times, for so many lifetimes, Krishna has been trying to help us, but we have neglected his help. But Krishna doesn't get tired because of our neglect. He keeps coming back to help us again and again. So then he keeps working, striving to help us. And that's why, as devotees, when we understand that this is one reality of life that will never change, that no matter what happens in life, Krishna will never stop loving me. No, this is actually a very hope-giving message. There is nothing that anyone can do that can stop Krishna from loving that person. There is nothing that we can do that can stop Krishna from loving us. Nothing can stop the infinite from offering his infinite love to the finite. So Krishna will always be there. In our heart, ever waiting, ever willing, ever working. So when we are rooted in this reality, then the worldly problems, they will not disturb us. Because we understand that my inner world will never be shaken. This is a reality which will never change. But when we are not rooted in this reality, when we are not rooted in the reality of Krishna's love for us, then we are rooted means situated in some other reality. I am situated in the reality that I am a brahmachari, I am a counselor, I am in charge of this project, I am a preacher and this and that. And these realities can change. I am a preacher and I think I give very good classes. One day I go for a class and I get a blackout. I just don't remember anything. If I am rooted in the reality that I am a very good preacher, then, and what will happen is, if I get a blackout, then I will get very disturbed. Now, if I am rooted in the reality that I am a servant of Krishna, and Krishna's love for me is the supreme reality of life, then, no matter what happens, okay, I forget, I am concerned. You know, I want to do this service Krishna well, so I am concerned, but I am not disturbed. Because I understand that, actually, whether I am able to give very good classes or not, Krishna still loves me. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that once I understand that I am your eternal service. Purva itihasa bhulinu sakala seva sukha paye mane amito tumara tumito amara kikaja paradhane. So he says that, my dear Lord, now that I have understood that I am your servant, that you are my Lord, so whatever has happened in the past, Purva itihasa bhulinu sakala, I'll forget everything that has happened in the past. I don't bother. Okay, I may have been sinful, I may have been pious. It doesn't matter. Forget everything. Actually, it's just like when a person wakes away from a dream, whether the dream was a nightmare or a pleasant dream, doesn't matter. It's over. So like that, a devotee's past doesn't matter. Of course, if you learned something in the past which you can use in our service to Krishna, that is fine. But otherwise the past doesn't matter to a devotee. So, the problems that are there in life, Purva itihasa bhulinu sakala. So, I'll forget it all and what will I do? Seva sukha paye mane. I will drink the joy of service. And how is this joy of service to be drunk? With the mind. Paye mane. And what is the basis for doing the service to Krishna? Amito tomara, tumito amara. I am yours and you are mine. Kikaja paradhane. What other wealth do I want, my dear Lord? As long as I am yours and you are mine, this is the greatest wealth of life. What else do I need? So, now the devotee, not that devotee is indifferent towards the wealth of the world. If the devotee gets that wealth, he or she will use that in Krishna's service. But the devotee doesn't depend on the worldly resources for serving Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was happy even when there was nobody following him. Even when he was in America, a lonely old man was satisfied. He was doing his translations, talking about Krishna to whoever came along. He was happy. And when thousands of people were coming, at that time also he was happy. So when nobody was coming, Prabhupada was concerned, but he was not disturbed. He was secure in his relationship with Krishna, and he wanted others also to have that relationship. That's why he was concerned, but he was not disturbed. So, as devotees, the more we practice Krishna consciousness, the more the material reality becomes peripheral and the spiritual reality becomes central. What does that mean, peripheral and central? Now suppose somebody rides first time in a plane, then people get very excited when they are riding in a plane for the first time. Nowadays planes are becoming common, but earlier, you know, people, oh, I'm flying in the sky. So what happens is that initially when we are very excited about something material, then the material reality is central to us. And okay, I'm flying in the plane, but for a person who's regularly been flying in the plane, you know, just getting into the plane, there's nothing great about it. Okay, I'm going in the plane somewhere. More important is not just traveling in the plane, where I am going, what I am doing. That is what becomes more important. So similarly, for a devotee, in the initial stages of spiritual life, see, when a person is not a devotee, and the person is a materialist, the material reality is the only reality. That means, oh, I got this pleasure, I didn't get this pleasure. This person honored me, this person dishonored me. That is the only reality. But as we become sadhakas, then the spiritual reality starts entering in the background of our consciousness. Yes. That actually I should think about Krishna, not just get so excited about these worldly things, whether I get pleasure or pain. More important is whether I am connected with Krishna or not. But as we advance in our spiritual life, what happens is, so initially the spiritual reality is just out of our scope. As we become sadhakas, the spiritual reality starts entering our scope. Still the material reality only remains important. So when I am giving a class, how many people are there for the class is more important than what I am speaking. Or what I am more important is whether people laugh at what I speak than what I speak. Why? Because the material aspect of the reality is more important than the spiritual aspect. But as we keep practicing spiritual life more and more, then the material reality becomes peripheral and the spiritual reality becomes central. So what is the spiritual reality? I am the servant of Krishna, and wherever, whatever situation I am in, I can serve Krishna and Krishna will accept the service that I am offering. So if at the level of this world the service is accepted, the service is glorified, that is wonderful. But if it is not, it doesn't matter. So as we advance in spiritual life, what happens is the spiritual reality becomes central, the material reality becomes peripheral. And the material reality is not unimportant, but it is not all important. It is important. We want, when we are preaching, we want people to come and benefit from Krishna's message. But that is not our central purpose. Our central purpose is to glorify Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur would say, even if nobody comes, preach to the walls. Why? Because the idea is, I am a soul and my duty is to glorify Krishna. If people come and hear, that's wonderful. But if they don't come and hear, still I will do my duty to glorify Krishna. So, as the spiritual reality becomes more and more central in our life, then we will be able to deal with the material reality also in a more mature way. Because when we are disturbed by material things, we can't respond to them intelligently. We often respond to them very... See, there are two kinds of responses. There is reflexive response and there is reflective response. Reflexive means somebody slaps me, tam, I slap that person back. So that is the reflexive. Now in some cases for survival, you know, if I suddenly feel a fire on my backside, I'll jump. That's a reflex. So with respect to many physical issues, reflex action is very good. But with respect to emotional issues, reflex actions are rarely good. Now, somebody insults me, then that person has insulted me once, I feel like insulting that person 111 times. You know, that reflex action only makes the problem worse. So there is a reflexive response and there is reflective response. Reflective means there is reflection, there is thoughtfulness. Okay, this thing happened and why has it happened? What should I do? How should I respond? So in general, especially with respect to emotional events, emotionally challenging, demanding
troubling events, the reflex response is rarely the right response. I see something attractive and then immediately I get agitated. Sarvadharman parityaja maya mekam sharanam raj. It's false. Ajamil fell like that. So, with respect to emotions, the reflex action is rarely the right action. What happens is, there is a road from the eyes that just bypasses the head and goes to the heart. And then you just get caught. Or it doesn't bypass, sometimes it bulldozes through the head. We know it is wrong, still it breaks through it and goes through. So the reflexive action, especially with respect to emotional situations, is not very good. Well, with respect to emotionally demanding situations, it's the reflective action that is important. That is what will help us to do the right things. And that reflective action comes when we are not emotionally dependent on our surroundings. I'll conclude with this point. Now, how Krishna consciousness frees us from worldly miseries is that Krishna consciousness frees us from emotional dependence on the world. See, when I am emotionally dependent on the world, then anything that happens in the world will shake me emotionally. But when I am emotionally nourished by Krishna, then what happens in the world will concern me but will not disturb me. If I am in the ocean, then the waves of the ocean are going to shake me. But if I am on the land, when I see the waves, if they indicate a storm, I am concerned, but I am not disturbed. So if we are rooted in material reality, if we are emotionally dependent on the world, then we will be shaken by worldly events. But if we learn to become emotionally dependent on Krishna, then we will not be shaken by the worldly things. We will be able to stay calm and then respond to them with greater maturity. And that is how we will become Krishna conditioned. And then therefore what will happen? As Badhante Hari Samshaya Bhautikascha Katham Klesha. How can the miseries of material existence trouble a devotee? As Vidura is told with respect to the life of Swayambhu Manu in this verse. So I'll summarize. I started by talking about how does Krishna consciousness free us from misery. I discussed four levels: education, purification, minimization, absorption. And in absorption, I focused primarily on the point of how material reality is basically boring. And that's why people want hyper-stimulating entertainment, because that is a misdirected attempt at absorption by which people can forget the boring and frustrating reality of routine life. But when we turn towards Krishna, the advantage is, so this, the going towards material reality is not only unfulfilling, it is aggravating, because the lust, anger, greed, they become worse when we go into that entertainment world and then return to the real world. But when we turn towards Krishna, actually what it does is it purifies us, it elevates our consciousness. And therefore, a devotee is concerned but not disturbed by worldly problems. A devotee knows that whatever the changes in this world, Krishna's love for me will always be unchanging. And when I am emotionally nourished by Krishna, then I am not emotionally dependent on the world. And to the extent I am not emotionally dependent on the world, to that extent I will not be shaken by the miseries that the world afflicts with. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? What are the various processes by which one can develop emotional nourishment? Generally, we have to see what it is that connects us with Krishna most effectively. That will vary for different people. So some people it may be just the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, some people it may be the pastimes of Krishna, some people it may be kirtan, some people it may be Vaishnava song, some people it may be deity worship. So actually, we have to understand that although Srila Prabhupada has given a standard process for advancement, our spiritual advancement is our responsibility. And you know, if a father is a millionaire and he divided his business and gave 10 equal shares to 10 sons. So now the business will run on its own. The father has set up the business. But still, if the son wants to expand the business, the structure of the business is given by the father. But expanding the business further is the son's responsibility. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada has given a standard process of Krishna consciousness based on the scriptures. And by following that, we will make advancement. But if we want to advance fast, then we have to take initiative in our spiritual life. And we have to find out what is the way by which
I get most connected and absorbed in Krishna. And do that more. Not that we neglect or reject other things. We do other things also. But whatever absorbs us more, we do that more. And that way, we develop ourselves. Just as we would have been enterprising if we were pursuing a material career. Similarly, we should be enterprising when we are pursuing a spiritual career. Prabhupada said devotees are opportunists. So opportunists are not just with respect to preaching, but it's also with respect to our own spiritual advancement. How can I get most absorbed in Krishna? Okay, thank you. I'll take this last question. So when a person becomes a devotee, the person should... what is this question? Prabhuji, agar hum 16 mala se jyada jap karte hai, char niyam ka palan karke Guru Maharaj ki krupa praapt kiya hai, agar humne Krishna consciousness hone se pehle दीक्षा चार नियम का पाप किया है तो भगवान हमारा सर्व पाप दूर करते हैं और हम उस पाप को अब याद करना चाहिए या भक्त बन के वैष्णव सदाचार का अपना को अपना कर जीना चाहिए या कृष्ण भगवान पे विश्वास करके पीछे के सर्व पाप को भूलना चाहिए. सो इफ वी हैव नॉट टेकन शेल्टर ऑफ कृष्णा एंड बिकम इनिशिएटेड शुड वी रिमेंबर आवर डस कृष्णा वी शुड जस्ट फॉरगेट दोस सिंस. Krishna certainly forgives our sins. The way His forgiveness manifests will vary depending on our individual consciousness. How best we can be drawn towards Him, that's how Krishna will manifest those reactions. He may completely take them away, He give a small token, whatever, He knows best. But we shouldn't worry about the past reactions. Kulashekar Maharaj says that, Lokasya vyasana panodhan karo dasyasya kim nakshamaha माभिर मंद मनो विचिन्त बहुधा यामिश्चिरं यातना नैवामि प्रभवन्ति पापरिपव स्वामी ननु श्रीधरः आलस्यं व्यपन्नीय भक्तिसुलभं ध्यायस्व नारायणं लोकस्य व्यसनापनोदन करो दास्यस्य किं न क्षमः. कुलशेखर महाराज सेइंग, ओ माइंड, डोंट बॉदर अबाउट योर पास्ट सिंस. माभिर मंद, ओ लेजी माइंड, मंद मनो विचिन्तय. Don't contemplate that because of my past sins, Bahudha Yamishchiram Yatana, that Yamaraj will give me a lot of miseries. Why? Why you shouldn't worry? I says, Yamishch Naivami Prabhavanti Paparipava Swami Nanushridharah. Don't you know that He will drive away all Paparipavah. And not only is He an enemy of Papa, He is Swami Nanu Sridharaha. He is the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. So He will drive away all misfortune and He will bring all good fortune in life. All that we need to do is, He says, Alasyam Vyapaniya Bhakti Sulabham Dhyayasva Narayanam. That give up laziness and just Dhyayasva Narayanam. Wholeheartedly contemplate on Lord Narayan. Wholeheartedly become devoted to Krishna. So actually, the only problem in Krishna consciousness is a lack of enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness. Now if we become enthusiastic, the problems will be there, but they won't trouble us so much. So therefore he says, alasyam vyapaniya, give up alasya. And he says, actually, lokasya vyasanapanodan karo dasyasya kim nakshamaha. He says, ordinary people, when they come to the temple and pray to God, God removes their miseries also. So, lokasya vasana panodhan karo, then dasyasya kim nakshamaha. Then one who has dedicated his life to Him, one who is trying to serve Him regularly, why? How can Krishna not help such a person? So, He is giving us three reasons for assurance. First is, Krishna is paparipavah. Second is, Krishna is sridharah. And Krishna is lokasya vasana panodhan karo. He is the enemy of sin, He is the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, and He gives good, He does good even for those who come just for utilitarian purposes to Him. When somebody who comes to offer His life, somebody who wants to become His servant, why will Krishna not help such a person? Definitely. So we shouldn't worry too much about our past sins, we should just focus on enthusiastically practicing Krishna consciousness. And should we remember our past sins? We have to see what is the consequence of that remembrance. See, if we say about remembering our past sins, we should remember, ultimately whatever we remember, we have to see whether it is anukul to bhakti or pratikul to bhakti. So if that remembrance agitates my mind, oh, I was enjoying so much, I'm missing it all now. If that's my perception, then better don't remember it. But if that makes me think, actually I was so fallen in the past, and Krishna has saved me from that terrible life, then that is good. So what is the difference between the two? When I remember my past, will I feel that, oh, I'm missing so much, or I have been saved from so much? What is the difference? That difference will be based on my current consciousness. Now, if I am stably situated in Krishna consciousness, then I will be happy. If I am happy here, then I will feel, oh, I was saved from so much. There was a little misery, but there was so much trouble after that. I was saved from all that. But if I am not practicing Krishna consciousness properly right now, I am not experiencing spiritual happiness right now, then when I think of that, oh, there was so much happiness there. Actually, there was so little happiness only. But as compared to not experiencing anything now, there's so much happiness there. I feel that I'm missing something. So we have to see. The basic principle of doing anything in devotional life is anukulyasya santalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. That whatever is favorable, accepted. What is unfavorable, rejected. So if the remembrance of our past lapses, past sins, stimulates us to take shelter of Krishna more by feeling grateful for what we have been saved from, then that is definitely anukul. So thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premande.